Do you know what a hafu is? The word hafu is something that is unique to Japan, and on this show, I talked to three other guests about what it's like to be a hafu in Japan. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And on this show, I am going to be speaking with three other guests who all have something in common with myself, and that is we are all hafus. Now, if you haven't heard the term hafu before, what it is, it's a Japanese English word for the term half. And what they're referring to is someone who is half Japanese, half something else. In Japan, they have all these words that are kind of English words, but the Japanese have kind of modified it to become a Japanese word. Like, I think it's called wase-ego. And so hafu is one of these words. It's like half, but hafu. And being a hafu and this whole kind of curiosity and interest in people who are mixed in Japan is rather fascinating. And I think unique to Japan, or maybe it's like more unique to Asia. I don't know. I think any country where you have like a very large homogenous population like Japan does, of course, anyone who stands out is going to be kind of looked on as a curiosity. And obviously, hafus stand out to some degree because we don't quite fit in. We look a little bit different and we maybe think and act a little bit different. So there's definitely a curiosity in Japan. And I noticed it was the same when I lived in Thailand as well. In Thai, they don't call them hafu, they call them lukrung. And that's like a half Thai, half something else person. And I know a lot of them were on TV and a lot of them were in media and all that. So they do kind of, I think maybe it's an Asian thing. Because I was thinking about this, like, you know, back in Canada, if I honestly met someone who's like, hey, I'm half Irish and half French, I wouldn't be like, wow, no kidding. I'd be like, hey, what's up? Are you, you know, like, and I can imagine in the States too, like, who isn't mixed to some degree in the States? Like, very rarely is someone in the States like, yeah, both my parents are German or whatever, right? So I think in North America, it's not as big a deal, but definitely in Asia, it's kind of a big deal. And so I wanted to bring together three people who are also hafus and talk about some of the different experiences that we've had in Japan. And one thing I found particularly interesting is that even though we all have different mixes and we all look quite different, we all had a very similar experience here in Japan. So joining me today is Nina Cataldo, who is half Japanese, half American. Hikari Hida, who is half Japanese and half Thai. And Wataru Miyazaki, who is half Japanese and half Ugandan. And I wanted to know if they felt more or less Japanese when they first arrived here.
I think for me, I was born in Tokyo and we moved to the States when I was 8 years old. But we spent every summer back in Japan, and my parents made sure that I had both of the cultures with me. But becoming an adult and then moving back to Japan 5 years ago, I've realized that, you know, for me, it was like, oh, I'm going back to my motherland and no big deal. But then I soon realized that people don't view me the same way that locals are viewed. So that was kind of shocking. It's not something that I had to deal with often in the United States. Everyone, like you said, you know, is mixed or you know, don't really question the background too much, especially when when I'm white passing or kind of can blend in with the others. So yeah, it was a bit of a shock when I first came back.
What about you, Wati?
So I did not have that much Japanese exposure growing up. And I guess my dad might've tried a little bit. I remember taking a couple of lessons in Japanese and that like continued for like a month at the most and it didn't work out. So I came to Japan pretty much as a stranger. And I didn't really know what to expect. So it wasn't that much of a surprised that I didn't quite fit in quite as well. At the same time, it seems a lot of people who meet me, Japanese people who meet me, tend to say that I'm very Japanese, for some reason. I'm not sure exactly why they say that. It might just be because I'm very laid back, or I don't know, polite or something. I'm not sure why. So character wise, it hasn't been a problem with me for me like blending in, but in terms of expecting to feel more Japanese or anything, I definitely don't feel coming back to my hometown or anything. It's more like a discovery as opposed to a returning to my home roots type thing.
Did you think that you were going to feel that? Like, were you expecting to feel like, yeah, I'm going back home? Or was it expecting to feel like a discovery?
I was expecting to see robots and super technology and stuff everywhere. That's what I was looking forward to. And I was disappointed.
Was it your first time coming to Japan when you moved here? Or have you visited before?
In my memory, like, I was here when I was a lot younger, for like, I think, a year. So they picked up that. But in terms of memory, first time.
And then Hikari, how about you? How do you feel about being in Japan?
Well, like Nina, I was born here. And then when I was one, I moved away for a little while. And then I moved back to Japan when I was six. So I started first grade in Japan, and I was bullied a lot at school for not looking like everyone around me. And at that time, I mean, Japanese was my main language. I could speak the most Japanese. There were things like my mother would come pick me up from school and she would speak Thai to me, but I was embarrassed to speak Thai to her because all of my friends would laugh at me or they would make fun of me for that. And so I think she was really sad for a period of time because I wouldn't speak to her. I would refuse to speak to her in Thai. And then I moved to China and I went to international school there. And I think there I saw that everyone around me, they were all speaking their own languages with their parents, and no one was embarrassed about anything. So then when I came back to Japan in high school, I think I really had the mindset of, I knew I wasn't going to fit in completely, but I would find a way to make it work.
I think school is really hard for Hafus, isn't it? Like, because I think like a lot of like same with me, like I was born in Canada, but I lived in Japan for a brief time when I was 6 years old to about 9 years old. So I went to a Japanese school from grade, I think, 1 to 3. And this was in Oita in like 1977 or something like that. So one, that tells you I'm super old. And two is in Oita in the 70s, there's like no gaijin at all, right? Probably in the whole prefecture, there was probably no gaijin at all. And I remember like my sister and I, because my sister's like 1 year younger than me, we went to school. We were like the only foreigners in the whole school. And I remember, yeah, it was really difficult, really, you know, standing out at that young age. Not really understanding. And I mean, I was like, what, 6 years old, 6 or 7? I don't know what half Japanese, I don't know what half and half is, right? I'm just like, hey, school, cool, play with Play-Doh and all that. And then everyone's like, you're different. I'm like, really? You know, so I remember like when my parents told me, like, we're going to go back to Canada, I was actually excited. I was like, yay, I guess I'm Canadian, I'll go back to Canada. Then I go back to Canada and we moved to this like super Inaka town in Canada. And this is like, you know, early 80s. There's like no Asian kids there at all either. So I'm like, crap, now I'm the Asian kid in this white school. So I was like, wow, what happened here? So I think for Hafus, school is can be really challenging. And I think especially because I think for parents, they might not quite understand what their kids are going through. Because unless their parents are third culture kids or half themselves, how can they relate? Right. Cool. So school can be a really, really challenging experience. Did you guys have any other challenges in school?
For me, one of the most memorable things is when I was in, I think it was first or second grade, but a boy asked me whether my parents met at a kyabakura.
Wow.
Yes. So wow. That's really something I remember until now, and interesting because that's not something that a 6-7-year-old kid comes up with on their own. They hide it somewhere else. And so definitely I think in terms of, I guess, having a Japanese father and maybe a mother from like Thailand, the Philippines, often this is a stereotype, or I guess, yeah, some things people still think of in Japan.
Yeah.
Nina, what was your schooling like?
Well, For me, I went to international school when I was in Japan. And then I went to, you know, the public schools and some private schools when I was in the United States. So I didn't really feel very outcasted or different. But I find it interesting when I look back on my experience in the United States, actually, in middle school, my nickname was Asian. And like, when I think about that now, it's like, and that was fine with me. That was fine with all of our friends. And now I feel like that wouldn't be as appropriate, but it's funny to think that that was just like, yeah, that's what my nickname was. It resonates with who I am. But it was, you know, never a thing that I was bullied about. Although I do remember when I first moved to the States, I think I was a little self-conscious of my Japanese bento and, you know, asked for the peanut butter sandwich. And my mom's like, what is that crap kind of thing? But I don't know if lucky is the right word, but I've been fortunate to have a pretty smooth sailing and understand that is not every hafu's experience. There are, you know, the experiences that Hikari went through. And then there are hafu kids, mixed race kids, who their classmates expect them to know another language or have another culture, but they actually only know Japanese or only have their Japanese parent around. So there's like different combinations on the stereotypes that I think Japanese society holds of hafu kids. And it's really hard because I think every person's experience is quite different.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the lunchbox because when I was doing research for this podcast, I read this person's blog and they talked about all hafus having a lunchbox moment. And I was thinking, like, that's a term that probably other people don't understand, right? But I know exactly what it is. You guys all probably know exactly what it is. But you're like, you totally bring your lunchbox. And yeah, for me, the same thing. Like, I open my lunchbox and there's like 3 onigiri in there. And all the like Inaka kids around me are like PB&J. And they're like, what's that? And then you're like, it's seaweed. And they're like, ew, seaweed? You eat seaweed? I'm just like, oh, God, kill me now. Like, can I just have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Is it that hard? You know, like.
It's funny because I think bento is a term used in English now, in North America at least, and it's kind of cool to have that. So I wonder how that has changed, you know, the setting in elementary or middle schools, and if you have a bento box, you're cool, or if the non-Japanese kids have bento boxes. I'm really curious to know about that.
Yeah, I wonder too, because like when I was in school, this was like in the 80s, right? So everyone had like the brown paper bag, you know? And then my mom is so Japanese. Like she wraps my bento in that cloth thingy, you know?
Broshki.
Yeah. So I'm showing up with this wrapped box and everyone else is like a brown paper bag. And then I have like pickles and like onigiri inside and everyone else is like PB&J and like a peanut butter cookie or something of that. And I'm just like, oh my God. Did you guys, Wati and Hikari, did you guys have any bento moments?
You guys both have the Japanese dad, so
yeah, right. I had a Japanese dad as opposed to the mom, so I didn't really have much of a bento moment. Mm. The only thing close enough to that moment I can think of is having little Japanese things in my food that I would like sort of boast about or like try and share. One that in particular comes to mind is furikake.
Oh yeah,
because that's a concept that is just blows everyone's minds. It's like, put this on your rice and it tastes so much better, sort of a situation. And I'd be like the cool kid for having this and people would ask me to share with them. And yeah, I was super lucky in terms of growing up because I grew up overseas till high school, like past high school. And I came to Japan after I'd like had the, you know, I figured out my identity and all that stuff. So it wasn't really like a issue for me.
Did you guys have any moments in school where you suddenly became cool? Like you said, like you brought the furikake in. So like you were kind of the oddball, but then something happened and suddenly like your Japanese-ness made you cool. Like for me, it was in the 80s, somewhere in the mid 80s or so, like suddenly martial arts movies started to become really popular and all these like ninja movies started to become really popular. And I used to do kendo when I was in Japan. So for like one Halloween, I just dressed up in my kendo outfit, went to school and I had this, like these bamboo swords and suddenly I was like a ninja. So all the kids were like, oh my God, you're a ninja, we never knew. And I'm like, of course I can't tell you I'm a ninja because I'm a ninja. And I was like, for like a day or two I was like the coolest kid in school. Did you guys have any moments like that?
It was food. It was a food thing for me. It was furikake nori because eating paper was like blew everyone's minds out, and the Japanese mayonnaise thing. Those three.
Oh yeah,
furikake nori and Japanese mayonnaise. This just blew everyone's minds away, and I was just cool for having all this amazing food.
So did your mom like cook a mixture of like Ugandan or Kenyan food and Japanese food, or?
I think most of the time we ate cafeteria food. It's just that because everyone had the same cafeteria food, adding extra stuff like, of course, mayonnaise or furikake, once again, just made it that much better. So I could have made some money off of that, but I wouldn't part back then.
Were you guys ever nervous about bringing friends over for dinner and like your, because my mom's Japanese, right? Like I was like, oh God, like don't prepare something weird, you know, like just try to make like potatoes or like we're in Canada, right? So just try to make potatoes or something, will you? Did you guys ever, were you ever nervous about that?
All the time. Yeah. Especially when I was in Japan, because I've had my obento experience was Thai rice. And kids would tell me that it was ksai, that it smelled really bad. And so I was always very insecure about that. So worried about having kids. But yeah, now Thai food is really like pak chi is everywhere. They abuse it. They make it into a whole salad. It's not supposed to be a whole salad.
How do you guys feel about kind of Japan's view towards hafus? Do you feel like Japan kind of accepts it, or do you think we're kind of an anomaly in Japan, or what do you think?
It's definitely not an anomaly, but I feel they accept certain kinds of half more than others. They sort of glamorize the half idea, and anything that doesn't fit in their glamorized ideal is sort of like ignored or disregarded.
Do you feel like that is like nodding to perhaps the half white?
Yeah,
because that's how I feel, and I feel sometimes ashamed that I'm half white, because I think that's unfair, and I think it's really important that Japanese society understands that there's diversity within the hafu community as well.
Yeah, I think that I saw that in Thailand as well, right? The lukrungs are always have that one, that kind of one look, you know, and so I think that society here in Japan, if you don't look like that, then they almost kind of question your hafu-ness, don't they? Like, they expect you to look a certain way. Wati, for you, was it challenging at all? Because you have a very Japanese name. Like, I can imagine, like, you know, if you go to the doctor or something and they call out, like, oh, Wataru, and then everyone, like, you stand up. You must get, like, one of these.
Yeah, it's definitely a conversation piece. I actually make fun of it a lot. I'm like, nice to meet you. My name is Wataru Miyazaki. This is the most Japanese name ever. And they're like, what? And everyone's like super shocked. And then like all the questions come out. But
what about you, Hikaru? You also have a pretty Japanese name as well.
I mean, a very Japanese name. Yeah. I talked to my parents about this a little while ago, actually, because we never had this conversation. But I do have a Thai name, but it's not on any of my official documents. My mother calls me by my Thai name, but that's it. And my father purposely did this so that I wouldn't have a hard time working in Japan. Mm. And I guess for me, I've been really, really lucky because I speak Japanese fluently. So not having a Japanese name, people don't question, I guess, my Japanese-ness very much, even if they look at me and maybe they do it. Some people do a double take. But if I had maybe a katakana middle name in there, I think that it would be completely different.
Wow, that's really great of your parents to do that. What's your Thai name?
May. May.
Yeah.
That's so very cute. I mean, you know.
I thought you'd have one of those super long Thai names, you know, instead.
Oh, yes. I mean, my mother's last name is Sririna Chatapong, so that's like, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've always wondered, like, when Thai people come work in Japan, because Thais traditionally have, like, really long names. And so, like, to try to, like, write that in katakana, it must be so difficult.
But every Thai person has a nickname as well. So they have their long Thai names plus their nickname.
Do you guys feel at all that you have any kind of like advantage in Japan being hafu?
Well, I think that definitely for me, the fact that I can speak English firstly helps a lot. I've been very privileged to have been able to go to international school and learn English. And my father really, really tried so hard to make sure my Japanese was somewhat at the level of my peers, even when we weren't in Japan. And so being bilingual as well as bicultural, I think helps me a lot in work, and especially at my job right now where my boss is American, but I work with Japanese people and we have to communicate with media in Japan. It's very, I guess, like a lot of the nuances there. It's not something you pick up on the job right away, but something I kind of picked up throughout my life. And so I'm able to use right now.
What about you, Nina?
Yeah, I think I am also fortunate in the fact that I was raised bilingually and biculturally. And I think that gives me a lot of opportunity to look at things from different angles. Some of my friends would say that I just play devil's advocate all the time. And I don't think that's true. I think I just like to explore different opportunities. And see that, you know, there's more than one solution or more than one way to look at something. And I think I credit that a lot to my upbringing as a bicultural person. So I think that, like you guys were saying, also, I think that has helped me in professional settings as well as personal settings. Yeah.
What about you, Wati?
Oh, wow. So my issue is that I wasn't raised in Japan. I was raised overseas. And that's, I only came to Japan after high school. Like my father was obviously in my life a lot, but he also had to go on work for long periods of time. So my Japanese experience wasn't as quite as strong as a lot of my other Hafu friends. That being said, for some reason, a lot of people think I'm very Japanese in terms of character of how I act or whatever. And I guess maybe because of that, two things or two sort of superpowers that I have would be a sort of ability to see like two different kind of opinion type of things, like what Nina said, and also being able to like get humor from both sides. Like it's a very different set of humor. Japanese humor and like Western humor and stuff is kind of different. So like manzai and that kind of stuff. And I guess that's kind of a superpower. I'm not sure, but yeah, there we go.
No, I definitely think it is. I think, you know, having the ability to kind of see both sides of the story is always advantageous in any situation, right? And I think Nina said earlier, is like I don't feel like I'm necessarily good at that because I'm half Japanese. It's just that I've grew up in a lot of different countries, and so kind of like, you know, created this. Like, I mean, you know, one of the things I've lived overseas now for 11 years outside of Canada, and I always kind of look back on like, what did I learn in each country? And there's like definite things that I learned that I would never have experienced back home. So I think, you know, and also I think being mixed kind of gives me that kind of feeling, because I don't feel like I'm a part of any culture. I don't feel like I'm Japanese. I don't even feel like Canadian. So I'm just kind of there, just absorb it all and kind of use that to my advantage, you know? So, okay. Last question is, you guys are familiar with the Hafu to Hafu website? And in that project, he asked all the Hafus a question. I want to ask each one of you a question from that website.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, so just pick a number between 1 and 120. Oh, and I will find this person, and then you get to answer that question. So, Nina, would you like to go first?
I pick, let's see, 75.
How do you appreciate Japan and its culture while being very critical about it at the same time?
Wow,
this is like my life every day.
You can thank Ronnie Aker from Norway. He's Norwegian Japanese.
Cool. So this goes back to being able to see things from a bunch of different perspectives, and Japan has a really strong place in my heart. I work in tourism for inbound market as well. So I do love to share this country and this culture with people who are overseas or who are new here. I think there are aspects of it that really should continue to be preserved or respected. But I think it's also important to realize, and this is not just for Japan, but for hopefully for Japan to be able to be more open-minded and creative as the world around it changes. I don't know if that really answers the question, but let me think about it for a second.
No, I think that does, because I understand what you're saying, is that Japan, I think actually kind of Hafus are uniquely positioned to maybe push Japan in this direction. Because one of the things I've always said too is Japan really needs more immigration. And not only just for the sake of immigration, it just needs more different thinking thrust into the company, the country. And I think that for the Japanese, it's really hard for them to accept viewpoints from non-Japanese. Even if that viewpoint is 100% correct and the Japanese knows it's 100% correct, because it's coming from a foreigner, they're like, you get the dame, you know? So I think like Hafus can push this the mindset a little bit, because the Japanese can't automatically disregard what you're saying because you're not Japanese, right? Because you're like, well, yeah, but I am. I'm half. Ha ha. So then it forces them to be like, ah, crap. Okay, now how do we deal with this?
Yeah, I think we're positioned in a place where we could bridge that gap. And I also do some work in diversity and inclusion, and have given workshops to Japanese communities talking about where mixed race kids or international kids could come from when they are, where, you know, how their thought process is, or how they, you know, what microaggression is, for example. And a lot of people in Japan still don't know what that is. And as someone who's experienced it themselves, I think, and being Japanese, I'm in a position where I can talk about it from my own experience, and hopefully create a dialogue with Japanese people. So I think there are ways to tackle issues like immigration or diversity, for example, in Japan, while still respecting and understanding how Japanese culture works and working with the people. Mm-hmm. It's the same in tourism, for example. I've gone to different areas of Japan to help with revitalization projects, and I know I never want to be in a position, and the people I work with never want to be in a position where we come from a quote-unquote foreigner perspective and be like, you should do this, you should do that. It's always talking with the locals and finding out what the strengths are, and then hopefully helping them, guide them in a way where they can empower themselves to make the changes happen. So, you know, it's a SWOT analysis, basically. You can look at where the strengths and weaknesses are, and then how can we work with Japan? How can we look at things from a critical perspective, but also work on making it a better country or better community for people? Yeah, so I think that's a kind of a way to look at that, where you can be critical, but you can, you know, also be very loving.
Great, perfect, okay. And Wati, can you give me a number between 1 and 120? Don't pick yourself.
I don't know where myself is, so I'll go with 12.
Okay, so you have Sena Komori, who is South African Japanese. And her question is, what feelings do you find hard to explain to your non-mixed friends?
Do I find hard to explain to my non-mixed friends? I'm assuming the Japanese non-mixed friends, or just any?
I guess any non-mixed friends.
I guess perhaps in my personal situation or my personal feelings, it might be trying to, or feeling like I should be like a bridge between two cultures sometimes. Like I feel like I have the responsibility to like sort of represent both sides to each culture. Like to Japanese people, I should represent the good sides of non-Japanese, and to non-Japanese, I should represent the good sides of Japanese and try and make them sort of understand. I mean, it's not my responsibility. I don't have to do that. It's not like something I have to do as a half, but I sometimes do feel like I should try and, you know, represent sort of, and like try and lift up the image of each one to each other person. Yeah, that's definitely a situation that I might have difficulty explaining to. Because, I mean, yeah, exactly like what I just said, you don't have a reason to do that, but as a half, you kind of want to sometimes. I'm not sure if that's a general thought process or just personal thought process, but...
When you guys came to Japan, did you feel more that you had to kind of, like, be aware of how you are perceived on, like, your other side?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. The more I'm here, the more I sort of feel I should sort of... I don't want to say represent, but I do want to say give a good impression of whichever, you know, culture I'm thinking of. It doesn't make any sense at all when I speak it out loud, but it's there, definitely.
It's a feeling.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, I know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of, like, especially white gaijin coming to Japan, this might be a first time in their life that they've ever been in that situation where their actions are representative of a larger group. And
right.
Because they've never been kind of associated with a larger group, perceived as part of a larger group. So when they come here or they go to Thailand or they go wherever, and I think many of them maybe not even realize it, but I know some do, is that something that they're like, oh my God, like, yeah, I should be a little bit more careful about what I say, what I do and whatnot. Just as, you know, to help others.
I mean, I think that's an interesting point you bring up, because I think being a white foreigner here is, you're still at somewhat of an advantage compared to people of other mixes or backgrounds. Unfortunately, I hate that that's how Japan is, and that's how the United States is as well. But yeah, I mean, I've heard of many of my white guy friends getting arrested for, you know, things they didn't commit, crimes they didn't commit and whatnot. But still, compared to how often my black or brown friends get stopped to, you know, get, you know, frisked by the police here, or how some of my Asian mixed friends aren't perceived as mixed, or, you know, like, just disrespected in different ways. I think, yeah, the white gaijin, the white foreigners still kind of have a quote-unquote better experience, or a luckier experience, I think. I mean, Wati and Hikari, what do you guys think about that?
I don't want to agree, but I do agree. I have to. It's not deniable. There's definitely a sort of favoritism towards Caucasian or European or whatever foreigners, Western foreigners. And yeah, definitely non-Caucasian or, you know, like black or brown or Asian foreigners are, I feel, seen with a slightly more caution or distrust than Caucasian foreigner would be. And that can, like, even like, for example, teaching English, for example, even if both might have perfect English or perfect, like, same background, there'd definitely be a preference for the Caucasian because they have the Caucasian look, as opposed to, you know, an Asian or black person from the same background. So definitely agree there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think like Chinese, Korean, East Asian, more of maybe if it's visually hard to tell that you're mixed, you can face many more different problems. Like, should you tell people you're mixed? If you tell people later, what will they think? Will they think you were hiding it from them? All of these other things. And like Wati said, I've had a few friends who are half Asian, and they grew up speaking English. English is their first language, but when they apply to an English-speaking job, they don't take them. And some places explicitly tell you why they don't take you, and it's because you're Asian and they want a Caucasian teacher, because that's what Japanese students are looking for.
What do you think Hafus can do to change that mentality? Because I feel like it's a bigger issue than just, like, white people or you know, perception, because I think part of it is that Japan is like such a hierarchical based culture and that everybody fits into a role. So they have this mindset of like an English person should look like this. And so they have a real hard time. Look at that, like, what was that, the lady who won the Miss Japan Universe a few years ago, and then whole country freaked out about it, right? Because
Ariana Miyamoto.
Right. So they have this, like, mindset of what a Japanese person should look like. And when someone comes along, or what a teacher should look like, or what a, you know, what an American should look like. And so when someone comes along that doesn't fit that, I think because Japan is such a homogenous society, they just basically don't know how to react to it. It'd be like if you went to like the, you know, you went to like a restaurant and someone says, hey, you want like a hamburger, and they give you a pizza. You're like, what's that? You know what I mean? So do you think there's something that Hapus could do to try to kind of educate the Japanese a bit about this?
I think exactly during situations like Ariana, being in the spotlight, you know, taking like positions of public, you know, like being in the spotlight basically would definitely help Japanese realize that, you know, it's not fixed. Japanese don't all look like the same sort of stereotypical Japanese, or foreigners don't always look the same type of stereotypical foreigner. Just, I guess, kind of raising awareness in the same way as Ariana and like other famous sports.
Okay, so Hikari, your last one, give me a number between 101 and 120. Hopefully you'll pick an easy one. Like, what, do you like sushi or hamburgers or something like that?
Let's say 22.
This lady is, oh my God, I don't even know how to pronounce this lady's name. She is half Moroccan, half Japanese.
Oh.
So her name is Layla Idrissi? I-D-R-I-S-S-I. I have no idea how to pronounce that. My apologies, Layla. Okay, so, interesting. Is the way you express your emotions linked to one country or culture more than the other? That's an interesting question, because you know what? I know about Thai people. They are very sabai-sabai until they get angry, and then they go completely bonkers, and then go back to sabai-sabai like in an instant.
Like, well, maybe this is a question that I should ask, you know, my family, my boyfriend, people around me.
Because Japanese are more reserved in their culture and their emotions, right? So when you express your emotions, do you go full-on Thai or do you go full-on Japanese?
I mean, I don't think I go full on either, but maybe my Thai side comes out more. Usually I feel like I'm much more Japanese. I feel more connected to Japanese culture, especially because I never actually lived in Thailand. I grew up speaking Thai with my mother, and we would go there once a year, once every 2 years, but I've never actually lived in Thailand. And so I feel much more connected to my Japanese side. But when expressing emotions, yeah, I think there are more ups and downs in me than, I'd actually like to think that I'm more fiery and I express what I really feel rather than being passive aggressive.
When you talk to your mom, do you feel more Thai?
Definitely. I think that when you speak different languages, it's almost, I mean, I don't want to say I'm a different person, but I think that it's not just the language that is different. You also adapt to the mannerisms of that culture as well. And so I've had many people tell me that I'm like a different person when I speak English versus when I speak Japanese. So I'm sure it's the same with Thai as well.
I think there are studies that actually has shown that. I've read that before, like multilingual kids, they kind of develop almost two different personalities depending on what language they're speaking. Oh, you should go spend more time in Thailand. It's fantastic. I love it.
Do you ever feel like there's like Chinese cultural influences in how you are, having lived there for a while?
I wouldn't say so, just because although I lived there during my formative years, I guess I mainly, although I can speak conversational Chinese, I attend an international school. So mainly that's where I learned my English. And I was surrounded by people from everywhere, not just the locals. And so I wouldn't say maybe I have any Chinese culture.
Okay, so last thing, Nina, can you tell us about the Facebook group that you have created for Hafus?
Yes, so there are quite a lot of different hafu communities that do exist on Facebook. And some are more Japanese language friendly, some more English. But what I've created is a group called Hafu Ladies, and it is specifically for women or female identifying or non-binary women. And it is for mixed race, Japanese, Hafu, Kwafu, Japanese heritage women. And we started it a year and a half ago, and we're up to about 700, nearly 800 members in the community. And it's been really exciting. We believe in the three pillars, which is to educate ourselves and others, and to embrace our identities and who we are as individuals and as a collective community, and to empower ourselves and one another once again. So it's been really awesome. Actually, this whole lockdown COVID has been very much a blessing in disguise for the community itself, because I was only... Me being in Tokyo, I was only able to physically host events in Tokyo before, but this whole thing has kind of allowed us to develop the community more online. So we've been doing a lot of weekly events, such as yoga. We do workshops. We just did one on mental health. We just did belly dancing this morning. We've done other dance movement sort of classes. We've done discussions on language and race and identity during COVID and things like that. So it's a really, really cool community. And it's just really awesome to see the diversity within the female community of the Hafu communities.
I want to thank Nina, Hikari, and Wataru for coming on the show. It was really fun to talk with other Hafus. The website that we got the questions from is called Hafu to Hafu, and it's a project by Belgian photographer Tetsuro Miyazaki, who wanted to photograph mixed-race Japanese people from around the world. His goal was to photograph Hafu, half-Japanese Hafus in every country around the world. And not only did he photograph these people, not every single Hafu, obviously. That would be a huge project, but Hafus from every country in the world. And each person that he photographed was also asked the question, what is the one question you would like to ask other half Japanese? So that's where we got the questions from. And their photo and their question was compiled into a book and posted on his website. And actually, Hikari and Wataru are also featured in that book. So if you want to go check them out, you can do so on his website at hafutohafu.org. And I think it's a really fascinating project. And I think it just really goes to show you how diverse this community is, you know, like of all these half Japanese and half something else around the world, it's a lot more diverse than I think a lot of Japanese think. I think a lot of Japanese, when they think of Hafu, they think of basically half Japanese, half Caucasian. And that's kind of what they just mainly see on the media. So I think they don't even realize that there's all these other combinations out there. So this project, I think, is a really interesting one, and definitely something that I recommend everyone checking out. So as I said before, you can do it on their website, hafutohafu.org, and I'll make sure to post a link to that on the show notes of this episode as well. And that's it. That wraps up this episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I want to thank all of my guests and thank you very much for listening. My name is Anthony Joe, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.